Facebook's Free Basics will not be coming to India anytime soon. The reports of Twitter's death have been greatly exaggerated, and there's a new way to torrent straight from your browser. But how long will it last? That and more on Tech News Today.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Tech News Today, episode 1445, recorded Monday, February 8th, 2016.
This episode of Tech News Today is brought to you by Ring, Ring Video Doorbell. With Ring, you can see and talk to anyone at your door from anywhere in the world using your smartphone. It's like caller ID for your home. Right now, get free expedited FedEx shipping when you go to ring.com/TNT.
And by PillPack, a full-service pharmacy that combines convenient packaging, modern technology, and personalized service to make your life easier. Visit pillpack.com/twit to save $20 on vitamins and OTCs when you transfer your prescriptions.
And by Wealthfront. Wealthfront is a low-cost automated investment service that is the most sophisticated way for you to invest your money. Whether you've got millions or you're just starting out, visit wealthfront.com/TNT to sign up and get your free personalized investment portfolio. That's wealthfront.com/TNT. Hello and welcome to Tech News Today. This is the show where we talk about the tech news with people who are passionate about technology. I am Megan Maroney.
And I am Jason Howell, coming to you horizontally, not vertically.
Not yet.
We're kind of flaunting with the idea of maybe doing the show vertically going forward.
What we do you are?
Think? Oh, yeah. Let's talk. I think we're talking about it a little bit in pre-show. I think it's a really good idea.
Okay.
I think we can capture a new audience if we just go vertical video.
Okay, good.
You want to do it? You want
to
do it? You in?
Yes.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't even know if the TriCaster is capable of doing that. So we might be technically limited. You're saved, everyone. Our guest today is Kurt Wagner, reporter and frequent guest, actually, interview guest on this show of Recode. How's it going, Kurt?
Hey, what's up, guys?
It's great.
I was thinking the vertical thing, I would still be in the screen. I think you too.
Yeah.
Would probably cut off.
You'd be the only one in the screen.
Yeah.
So
it's
feel free to go for it.
Prime placement for guests. Okay. That's how we roll. We have a bunch. I mean, as usual, you know, we regularly have your stories in the show, but it's great to have you here for the full episode because we have, hey, what do you know, a couple of stories of yours to talk about, starting with this one.
Yes, today the regulatory authority in India issued new rules that would ban Facebook's Free Basics offering, thereby upholding the spirit of net neutrality. Kurt, were these new rules a surprise?
They weren't. They weren't a surprise. This has been an ongoing battle between Facebook and these Indian regulators now for some time. And there was an open comment period for the last couple months where everyone was trying to rally their supporters on either side to go to, you know, the regulators and plead their case for why either Free Basics should be allowed or not be allowed. And, you know, today we found out which side they ended up ruling on. And so while I'm sure Facebook's pretty frustrated, it's not a total surprise.
How did they exactly say that they were that this Free Basics is a violation of net neutrality? What was their point there?
So it wasn't actually just Free Basics. They ended up saying that all zero rating services or all services that offer some kind of internet for either a discounted or, you know, in this case, like a free price are banned. And the reason is that, as you pointed out, this is a net neutrality issue for them. And they see that if, you know, some services online are going to be for free and others are not, well, obviously, that doesn't create a very equal playing field, and there are going to be certain businesses like Facebook that end up benefiting from that and other businesses that don't. And so, you know, the rule as it stands is really just that none of these services, not just Free Basics, but, you know, it certainly impacts them. I think probably they're a little bit more well-known than a lot of the others. None of them are going to be allowed. And, you know, I've been asking Facebook, like, kind of what's the next step for them. We don't really know yet. We don't know if they're able to fight this, if it's something that they're going to have to try and work around. I'm not entirely sure at this point. It's still a little new, but it's not just Facebook. Everyone. No free internet for anyone unless it's the entire free internet.
Kind of reminds me a little bit of, I think it was, you know, a couple of weeks ago, the T-Mobile binge on service, which, you know, essentially if you're a T-Mobile subscriber and you don't opt out of it, essentially certain video streaming services would be free. I think it's very interesting because we are starting to hear this more and more, services that are kind of creating these incentivized, sometimes free internet for certain, certain sites or services to get through. I don't know, like when I hear about them, I feel like on one hand, their heart's in the right place, right? Like I feel like Zuckerberg really wants to bring the internet to people who might not get it otherwise. But then at the same time, you run into the net neutrality argument. So it seems like, yes, okay, that's nice, but the long-term ramifications of that might be pretty significant. This is kind of interesting for Facebook to be in this position because in the U.S., they are proponents for net neutrality. Yet basically what they're doing in India is now seen as going against net neutrality. So I wonder if they're kind of having to look inside of themselves and really understand what their stance is by and large on this stuff.
Well, and sorry, but to jump in real quick, Mark Zuckerberg would argue that this is not actually a net neutrality violation. And that's because what Facebook did was, I think it was maybe last May, so it's now been a while, they opened up Free Basics and said, hey, this is now a platform. Anyone who wants their service on here for free can come and join us in this app. The problem is, of course, there's some hoops to jump through, right? And
right.
Not everyone is going to go through the process of creating a Free Basics level service and apply and go. So, Facebook is still a gatekeeper in a lot of ways. So their argument is, hey, it's not violating net neutrality. Anyone can join us. But of course, it's not quite that simple.
Well, how hard is it? That's what I was wondering. I mean, because, that was the argument everyone made. Oh, well, Facebook is creating this walled garden. They just want to send Facebook to India. They don't really care about free internet for everyone. But then you see that anyone can be involved. I mean, Free Basics includes more than just Facebook. It's Wikipedia, weather, other sites. And how hard, what kind of hoops do they have to jump through? I mean, I understand that, like, just having to jump through any hoops makes it not, different from the internet. But what do they have to do to get to be part of Free Basics?
So I think the most challenging part of it is making your product work in areas where bandwidth is really crummy, right? So for a company like Facebook, they have a lot of resources to make sure that Facebook works or trying to make sure that Facebook works in areas where, you have 2G cell coverage, right? Like you don't have a smartphone, you're working on a 2008 flip phone or whatever it may be. And so that's a benefit that Facebook has. Think of all the different services you see online, all the different websites. How many of those, A, have a mobile presence, like a mobile app, and B, are, have the manpower or the finances to build their service for an environment where the Wi-Fi stinks. And so I think that that's really where the hurdles come in, is not so much that, I have to fill out a form to join this Free Basic service. It's that I need to build my product so that it actually works and that it works well, because Facebook's not going to take products and services that don't work with its app. And so I think that's where most people, run into a wall, is they simply say, if they even know about this program, maybe they don't have the time or the resources to dedicate to making their product work on Free Basics.
That's a tough one, though, because, many people in many countries just are on mobile. They don't have computers. Many people in the United States are just on mobile, and don't have computers. And so it would benefit everyone if these sites worked on mobile devices. So I get that what you're saying is it's too expensive for a lot of places to make sure that they are on mobile. But maybe that's where people should start first now.
Oh, sure. But it's also tough for Facebook to tell people that, right? Mm-hmm. You might go to a web developer and say, hey, listen, you're wasting your time building for a laptop. In 5 years, everyone's going to be on a mobile phone, and you should be working on an app or something like that. But that's not really, I think the argument here is that's not really Facebook's, place, right? They shouldn't be the ones dictating who is, accessible on the internet. And that's how people feel that Free Basics currently works.
So India is a big deal for them. You said they're not done fighting this, but India is big. I mean, there's a lot of people in India, there's a lot of people in China too, but they're already locked out of that market. So, this is really important that they get into India in any way they can, right?
Super important. Yeah. And I wish I had the numbers off the top of my head, and I'm sorry that I don't, but I know that India is their, second largest user base outside of the United States. And I believe it's, you know, the second largest country in the world besides China, right? And so there's a lot of room for growth and a lot of room. And there's a lot of future Facebook users in India that are either just now coming onto the internet for the first time or still have never even used the internet. And so that's why Facebook is pushing so hard to be available to them here. So when they do finally get a Wi-Fi connected smartphone or whatever it may be, or a flip phone, they can, you know, the first experience they have when they log onto the internet is Facebook, because that's really important, right? You're going to remember that, and you're probably going to use the service. So this is super important for them. We've seen, you know, Zuckerberg has gone to India. They've sent a lot of employees to India throughout the last couple of years to learn about the culture, to learn how the technology works there, what the Wi-Fi signals are like. He hosted the Prime Minister of India on Facebook's campus last year. So, you know, they put a lot, they're not being shy about the fact that India is very important to the company. So this is definitely a bit of a blow for that effort.
Well, moving on to another, you know, of course, another article that you wrote. Twitter appears to be in a constant state of transition right now. First, Kurt, you wrote this morning, along with Kara Swisher, that your sources are pointing to a few board members departing and being replaced, potentially timed with a fourth quarter earnings call later this week. And it sounds like Twitter is possibly considering some interesting names from Hollywood. What's this all about?
Yeah, so this has been something we've actually been kind of reporting or flicking at now for a couple months. But Twitter is, the board is looking to swap out, what we're hearing is two members. So currently, Peter Currie and Peter Chernin are on the board, and they are expected to depart in the near future. And Twitter is looking to bring on some more maybe well-known names from the media world. Shonda Rhimes, the television producer and writer, is someone who is kind of near the top of their list. We've also heard names like rapper Kendrick Lamar. Oprah's name was tossed around there, but we're told that Oprah is a no-go for Twitter's board. But what you can see here is, I mean, the company is clearly trying to get folks who are familiar with creating and distributing content, right? I mean, Twitter is a content platform. They argue we have the best content in the world. We want to make sure people can see it and absorb it. And right now, no one on their board is really in that realm, I would say, from a mass recognition standpoint. And so here you are trying to bring on some people who can relate to the public, but who also are familiar with the kinds of things Twitter wants to do, which is get great content in the hands of its users.
And embrace just the media aspect of Twitter. I mean, Twitter is such a crazy place to be if you're following media, let alone creating content. Mm-hmm. You know, it's all there. And a big story over the weekend, of course, involved BuzzFeed's article saying that Twitter was moving to an algorithmic news feed approach. The backlash on Twitter was marked with hashtag RIP Twitter. Eventually, Twitter CEO Jack Dorsey jumped in the conversation, kind of trying to, you know, get at the concerns that maybe the magic of Twitter was about to be lost. We've all gotten very used to Twitter in the way that it operates right now, you know, most recent at the top and everything older than that down below, not influenced by an algorithm. What exactly did Dorsey have to say about these concerns, Kurt?
Well, he was basically like, calm down, right? I mean, we're not, he came out and said something along the lines of, we never intended to release an algorithmic timeline next week, which was what the initial story said. But I think more so than that, it seems clear, given there's been a number of Twitter employees who have jumped in to kind of defend the idea of an algorithmic timeline. From the folks that I've talked to, this is certainly something they're thinking about. So I think it's clear that, you know, what he was trying to do here was simply say, listen, we're not simply going to become Facebook. We're not going to abandon the reverse chronological timeline that everyone has, you know, come to know and love with Twitter. I think what they're trying to do is, and we've kind of already seen this, right? If you use Twitter often, you've probably seen a feature called while you were away. Mm-hmm. So when you log in after you haven't been on the app for a while, you'll see a string of tweets that were popular in the time that you were gone that you might not have seen otherwise because they would have been so far down your feed. So I imagine that this algorithm, whatever it's going to be, we don't know exactly what it's going to look like or when it's going to show up, but I imagine that it would be somewhat similar to that, where they simply say, there's a ton of great content on Twitter. The way that our feed works right now is it's very easy to miss things, right? You're only going to see the most recent stuff unless you really want to scroll through and comb through all those tweets. We're going to do a better job of showing you the stuff you've missed to make sure that you always see the best stuff that Twitter has to offer. I would be shocked if they get rid of the reverse cron timeline altogether. I would even be pretty surprised if they did two timelines, right? You can either have the reverse cron one, or you could have an algorithm only one. I think it's going to be somewhere in the middle, and I don't think that it's going to necessarily dominate the feed. I think people will find that it's probably a little more subtle than they're imagining it'll be.
Okay, so the media loves this reverse chronological timeline. Like, they want to know things that happen as it happens. Does anybody else, I mean, is there anyone else, or is it just us? Because, I mean, you heard this uproar, but it was from all the people that we probably follow because we're in the media. But do average normal people really care, or would they appreciate that algorithm so they don't miss the important stuff?
You know, it's so hard to tell, really, because I remember about a month ago, and I'm pretty sure we talked about this, I also reported that they're thinking of expanding the character limit to 10,000 characters, right? It's now at 140. And I remember when we wrote about that, my notifications were just bombarded with people who were just like, this is the worst. Twitter's, you know, what are they thinking? This company is going to fail. And I remember looking at some, who are these people, right? Like, I don't follow them, they don't appear to follow me. Where are they coming from? And, you know, it was like Joe Smith from Kentucky with 120 followers, right? Like, he seemed like a regular Twitter user. And I think there are a lot of normal folks who feel strongly about the product, but it's so hard to tell, you know, if these are still like the power users or people who, you know, we haven't even talked about people outside of the U.S., right? Like, everyone I see seems to be from the U.S. I mean, the majority of Twitter's users are outside the country. And so how do they feel about it? I have no idea. So it's a little tough to tell. But yes, the media is who controls, obviously, the storyline for most of this stuff. And most of the media people seem to think it's a bad idea. And therefore, that trickles down. And there's, I don't really know what Twitter can do about it other than do a better job of controlling the news cycle, right? Because so far we've seen the BuzzFeed story, then The Verge had a follow-up story, and they both kind of hinted at, okay, here's what this might look like, but we really don't know. And then everyone starts to speculate. And when that happens, of course, that's a losing situation for Twitter, because now we all look at, we're having this whole conversation. We have no idea what this product even looks like. So that stinks for them.
And we're not even done talking about Twitter and potentially some bad sides of Twitter, you know, around the Super Bowl and everything.
Yeah.
So it's just the culmination. Twitter's in such a rock and hard place scenario right now. They've got their earnings coming up. It's not a lot of good stuff, hitting the news cycle. And very rapidly, like very condensed over the course of the past couple of weeks, it's been one thing after another for them.
Yeah.
Not good.
I mean, it is interesting because I think like no one really complains about how Facebook has an algorithm to show you, you know, what you think you want, because everyone's like Aunt Mabel sees what she wants to see because Facebook knows, like, you know, so it's, and I think that's maybe what Twitter is thinking here, that if we have more people and we show them what they want when they want it, they will stick around more. You know, that's the idea, I guess.
Yeah, and they're hoping that they can lure new people too, right?
Right,
people who are familiar with Facebook and with how that works, and say, all right, I you know, follow 100 people on Twitter, but every time I show up, it's just like Kurt Wagner's tweets. This guy's the worst, right? But meanwhile, all the great tweets are below mine because I just happen to be the last one that tweeted, and they're missing that stuff. So
right.
I think they figure, you know, let's put the best stuff up top, and that'll keep more people coming back.
Yeah, and I mean, that's the thing about when people say, oh, well, I'm going to try out Twitter, and, you know, they tweet 3 or 4 times and no one does
right.
anything with it because no one sees it.
Totally.
And so that's the idea that, like, you know, my Aunt Mabel would see my tweets and, you know, I would see hers and I would like them and, you know, then maybe she'd stick around. I don't really have an aunt.
That's kind of my, that's actually kind of one of my theory as to, I mean, to boil the ocean down to one simple thing. I mean, you think about why Facebook and Twitter, maybe Facebook might be a little more successful. Like, everything you put, it's hard for me to see anything that someone puts on Facebook that's at least one person hasn't liked, right? Because it's your friends, it's your cousin, or even your mom or your grandma or whoever. Like, you're going to post that photo and someone's going to like it. When you go to Twitter and post, like, until you get a good number of followers, there's a pretty good chance no one's going to engage with your tweets at all. And that is not a very fun experience. And so I think that, you know, it does turn people away when they come to this platform and they say, oh, I want to tell a joke. And they tell their joke on Twitter and they have 5 followers and none of them like it. You know, that's disheartening. So,
right.
I don't know. We'll see if this could change that.
Yeah. And the flip side of that is then they tell a bad joke that might be accidentally racist. And then, you know, that there are five followers for it. And then suddenly, you know, your career
Somebody
ends.
It makes the front page of such and such.
Yeah.
Right. So it's like there's, you know, you can't say, well, I only have five followers, so I'm going to say whatever I want and everyone will understand. And so, yeah, it's a hard place. But
yep.
Let's move on to Wired. Today they announced a new subscription plan for their website that you can pay $3.99 a month for no ads. And then after February 16th, you will not be able to visit the site using an ad blocker. This is interesting. I'm really fascinated by this. I don't know why they think it's going to work, but it might. I mean, they're Wired because, I mean, the New York Times has been trying this forever. Subscription model, no ads. You know, they've tried everything, and it seems like ads are the only way to go for them. So I don't know. What do you think about this, Kurt? Do you think this sounds like it's going to work?
Well, it's really tough, right? And you'd like to think that you're creating a product that is worth paying for, right? I mean, I know that we do not have a paywall at Recode, but I'd like to think if we did, that it'd be like, oh, of course people would pay for Recode, right? We deliver great stuff. But the reality is that unless you really need to read something the instant it happens, as soon as anything that's breaking or super relevant comes up, about 20 other publications jump on it right away anyway, right? So any scoops that Wired might have, or I guess maybe this would only work, or that you could be lured in for like long, you know, they still have a magazine, right? So they're going to have long form stuff. So maybe that's where the people are willing to pay money to come check that out, because it can't really be replicated anywhere else. But from a news standpoint, it's really hard, because as soon as you break a story, there's 20 other publications that are jumping on, and you really don't have to go to the original source to get anything anymore. And so, you know, I think there's a lot of media organizations that are dealing with the same issue Wired is. Clearly, no one has figured it out exactly. And I don't want to say it's not going to work, because I hope it works for them. But I really have no idea how many people are going to be willing to pay for that.
Yeah, it seems like it's kind of for the Wired super fan, let's say, you know, and I think it's interesting. They're going to make some extra content for the people who are paying, you know, so kind of like replace the ads that you would see with some content that you wouldn't see if you weren't paying. So that makes sense. I just kind of liken it. I realize this is kind of going back, like we've been all of these different places when it comes to content on the internet and, you know, going to sites and paying for access versus getting it for free. But I kind of liken it to just us being used to paying money for a good app, right? Like we have so many apps on our phone. Let's say I've got an app on my phone. I really like it. And it's got an ad on there and I don't want to see the ad anymore. And I want to support the developer. Sure, I'm fine to pay like $3 and get rid of it. So I suppose if you love Wired's content, you might not feel so bad about this. Or you just whitelist in your ad blocker if you have to run an ad blocker to kind of throw it their way. And the only other thing that I can think is that Google Contributor is kind of another good way to kind of do this. And I wonder if Wired gets any of that kick down money from Google for that. Basically, you pay a certain number of dollars per month to Google, and then they have, quote, millions of sites that they block the ads for you, and then give that money, you know, a portion of that money to the publisher. So I don't know, you know, there's
are ads this bad? I don't know about you guys. I mean, I guess I'm just so used to maybe tuning them out. I don't feel like I consume them. Maybe I do without even realizing it, but I can't imagine paying money just so that I don't have to see a banner ad, right? Like, it really doesn't impact me all that much, or so it feels. I guess, you know, some ads are touchier to some people, but for me, I don't know. Ads don't bother me all that much.
Well, I mean, even Wired points out, like, you know, they understand the reasons sometimes that people block ads, specifically that it speeds up the browsing process. Okay. You know, and there is definitely a speed difference. Like when you've got ads on a site versus not, you put them side by side. They do these all the time. You know, I've seen them all over the internet, and it's very interesting to see just how much speed you gain. But, you know, there's also the very ethical aspect of that, and at least having an option. I think what I like about this is giving somebody the option to do it, so that those, you know, because they will have, I doubt it's going to be an overwhelming majority, but they will have people who are willing to spend $4 a month for that content and do it legitimately, and that's better.
Yeah. It is, I mean, I do think of all the sites that I go, Wired has gotten particularly bad in the last, I don't know, 6 months or a year.
There was
a lot of ads that, you know, blocked the content. It wasn't just banner ads. It wasn't just, you know, sidebar ads. It was blocking the content. But I get it. You know, I get that you need to figure out a way. And so, like you, I hope this works, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
One of the best methods of hacking, or so I'm told by people on the internet, is social engineering.
Don't believe what you hear on the internet.
That's what they tell me. No amount of technology can protect someone from simply handing over the keys when they've been tricked into thinking it's okay to do so. Case in point, the story from Motherboard, which resulted in the public sharing of more than 9,000 Department of Homeland Security staffers on Twitter. Basically, the hacker got control of a Department of Justice email address, tried to log into the web portal for the DOJ, and that didn't work, called up and claimed to be new, that he couldn't get into the portal. They actually asked for a token code, and, you know, the hacker said he had none, and they basically gave him their own, said, well, we'll give you access this one time. That's all it takes. So that's social engineering 101 right there. Sometimes it's better to do, you know, to do that than to do the highly technical way of doing this. Anyways, they have, you know, released 9,000 of these names, you know, lots of information here, name, titles, email, phone number, claim to be releasing at some time today, in fact, up to 20,000 FBI staffers. All this information that they basically pulled from this hack. So I don't know what you do with this. I mean, basically the DOJ is saying this is all very outdated information. It's kind of like finding a phone book from 5 years ago or something. It's like, okay, well, you've got some stuff in there, but it's not a big deal. But still kind of embarrassing that it happened at all. Yeah. And so easily, you know. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's good reporting, I guess. Good reporting technique. I don't know if it's the most ethical, but you know what? Got the info.
And by the way, no mistake here. It was not Motherboard who did this. They basically had someone.
Yeah.
Yes.
But yeah. I guess I'm saying whoever did do it, you know, they could probably get a reporting job.
Yeah. Exactly. That is how Kurt gets his information out of Jack Dorsey. Exactly that way.
Yeah.
It's that's one way to do it. Yes, exactly.
Yep.
Yeah. I work at Twitter, and I just don't know the code.
Right.
All right. Well, a new site will let you watch whatever you want for free straight from your browser. All you have to do is pretend you don't understand how copyright works. First, let's take a minute to thank the Ring Video Doorbell. This episode of Tech News Today is brought to you by the Ring Video Doorbell. With the Ring Doorbell, you can see and talk to anyone at your door from anywhere in the world using your smartphone. Why don't you go ahead and ring that?
I will.
Listen to it.
Oh.
That's
it's
what
doing
it sounds
it.
Like. Someone's at your door.
There we go.
Ring's advanced motion detection alerts you even if someone doesn't ring the doorbell. I get these alerts on my phone and on my Apple Watch. It is great if you have school-age kids that are dropped off at home when you might still be at work. With Ring Video Doorbell, you can talk to delivery people, and they don't even know that you're not at home. A Tech News Today viewer wrote in with this story about why he installed a Ring doorbell in his elderly parents' house. He writes, they have difficulty getting to the door and are often resting in the day. They also have a few people that canvass in the neighborhood for sales, but need healthcare workers to come and go at various times of the day and night. It has been a godsend to protect our parents when we are away. The motion detector alerts my wife via iPhone as people are coming to the door, and she often preempts them before they ring the bell by talking to them and then sending them away or even giving them a combination for the keypad lock if they need to get in. She also knows when they're leaving. Installing Ring takes minutes, and it works with either your current wiring or a built-in rechargeable battery. So put your mind at ease and protect your home with a video doorbell. Time Magazine and USA Today named one of their top 10 gadgets of 2015. Go to ring.com/TNT for free expedited FedEx shipping. That's ring.com/TNT. With the Ring, you are always home.
All right. So torrent downloads come with their own limitations. You know, downloading large files can be sped up thanks to BitTorrent. But when it comes to watching full-length video, let's say, those downloads can still take quite a while. That keeps the user from watching their content until it's totally done transferring. Ryan Whitwam from Geek.com is here to talk about a new solution for streaming torrents. Welcome to the show, Ryan.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Hey, it's good to have you on here, sir. So first of all, tell us a little bit about this torrents time and kind of what it, you know, technically what it's doing to the torrenting process.
So it's a browser plugin, which is able to, on trackers that support it, will let you basically stream the video contained in the torrent. And that starts in a couple of minutes. So it's considerably faster than if you're going to download a torrent and then manage the files and stream it to whatever you were going to watch it on. It's just, you know, once you get it installed, it's like a button click and a little bit of buffering, and it just starts playing a video. It's kind of magical and neat. And then you just sort of, and then you, like you just showed on the page there, they have a test video on their webpage that is a royalty-free video, as if that's what people are going to use it for. Right. But obviously that's not what's happening. People are going to watch Game of Thrones. So it's a little bit buggy and weird right now. They're very big on this whole like it happens instantly thing, but it doesn't really. It takes a few minutes to buffer. So it contains a torrent client, and which is an open source component that they modified, and then apparently a completely custom video player. So it sort of preferentially downloads the chunks of data that are at the beginning of the video that you actually want to start watching. Because when you're downloading a torrent, normally through most clients, it just downloads whatever is you know. Whatever it can get at any time. It just puts the file together later. So this, you know, it starts downloading, you know, more or less the beginning and then to the end, and it'll download the file and you're streaming it and it shares the file like any other torrent client, but it doesn't keep all the files. So you don't have to deal with like a bunch of giant files later. It's just, on the surface, it feels like Netflix streaming, even though it's, you know, a torrent client.
So what makes this different? I mean, why was this news? Are there other sites that do this, or have no sites done this yet?
This is very reminiscent of a service called Popcorn Time, which was originally, it was like its own self-contained thing that listed torrents from other trackers, and you would sort of stream video like that. But it had a number of legal issues, and the original version of that doesn't exist anymore. So this is kind of a way to do a similar thing, but it can work on any tracker that decides to support it. So the Pirate Bay added it the other day, and now it's kind of, in some ways, if you want to think of it like this, the largest video streaming site in the world now. And a number of other sites have decided to add it too. There's a sort of a clone of Popcorn Time now that has this, and it's... I mean, if it's adopted widely, it'll make the whole torrent thing a lot easier. And I think maybe kind of dangerous for people that don't know what they're doing, mm-hmm. because you're still running a torrent client. When you connect to the Swarm to download this, what you're seeing is you just click a button and video streams. But what you're actually doing is the same thing you would do with a torrent client. And if there's a rights holder that's watching the Swarm, like some of them do now, to send out infringement notices to ISPs, you would get caught up in that. But so here's the thing that this product does to make money, apparently. When you connect to a Swarm, it pops up a warning and says, oh, by the way, your IP address is in the open when you're doing this. Do you want to pay a few dollars for this VPN that we have built into to the streaming service? So I guess some people might do that. But
yeah. And is it a one-time fee? Let's see here. Okay,
I think it's daily. You pay a couple bucks, like 24 hours, and then I think they have longer-term plans. I don't know anything about the VPN that they're using though. So I mean, I don't know for sure if that's actually, you know, one that you would want to use.
Right.
But I mean, just in general, like the way you download this feels kind of shady because you're on the Pirate Bay, and they have a little link now for streaming. You click it, and it downloads an EXE. Which, if you've been using the internet for any length of time, you know is not safe. You don't want to do that. I mean, and I can't say for sure that this is safe in general. It doesn't smell like malware. Mm. It just seems shady. And it seems like they have a business model, and they have a GitHub where they have some of the open source code up. So right. There's nothing inherently illegal about a torrent client, or in this case, a torrent streaming service. It's just what you do with it. Like you could go out, you could have a gun, and that's not illegal. But if you use the gun to rob a bank, that's very illegal.
Yeah. So Netherlands-based Brine, it's an anti-piracy group, has actually issued a cease and desist already. You know, it took them a week to do it to Torrent's Time, basically stating that the tools. You know, primary use is to facilitate content infringement. I know that this was kind of used on BitTorrent back in the day too. And like you said, Ryan, like you know, BitTorrent is a technology. Yes, it is used very frequently for infringing, but it can also be used for other things. Is this the kind of thing, like, do groups like Brian have a leg to stand on in this race at this point, or are they just kind of too late to the game as far as this is concerned?
I feel like going after the tools like that, that really only works when the people you're going after don't have the resources to fight back, because I don't think it'll actually hold up if it really comes down to a legal battle. Mm-hmm. Because I mean, you could make any number of arguments about things you can do with this that are completely legal. The thing about this particular implementation is it doesn't rely on the people who are making it to have like an active website or a server or anything. It's you know, a file that's distributed. It's a browser plugin. It could be delivered in any number of ways. They don't have to be actively distributing it themselves if they have deals with all these trackers that can give it to people.
Mm-hmm. Well, this is interesting stuff. I would say use at your own risk if you choose to, if this is your cup of tea. But just want to thank you so much for coming on, Ryan. Ryan Whitwam, tell people where they can follow you and all the work that you do online. I know you're in a bunch of places.
I get around. Go to Twitter at Ryan Whitwam. It's down there at the bottom. I list all of the places that I work. You can go and read the words that I write.
Really thanks, appreciate Ryan. Having you on, Ryan. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks. No problem.
All right. Take care.
All right. Regarding our ongoing conversations about how we don't understand Snapchat, Matt B. writes, the reason that Snapchat video clip episodes are so popular is that vertical video is properly shot to fill the screen in portrait mode, thus creating images that wouldn't normally be as full for a video unless it was watched in a much larger tablet. That's new, and people may enjoy it for, albeit subconscious reasons, forcing people out of widescreen, basically. We were joking about this before in the show, but is there something psychological going on? What do you guys think about? I mean, because we are used to watching vertical video with black bars on the side.
Right.
So it is nice, and I didn't even realize. What do you guys think about this?
Go for it, Kurt.
Well, yeah, I was going to say, I mean, when you look at, we were talking about this earlier, right? Everyone's consuming things on their phone. I mean, nothing looks worse than, A, trying to watch a video on your phone that's already small, and B, having it be like on YouTube where it's a vertical video, but yeah, you got the black bars, which is now cutting into more of the real estate. I mean, obviously, they figured it out quite a bit where even if it's a horizontal video, if you tilt your phone, it normally will fill the full screen, which is nice. But I think just the way I had this issue even just the other day, I was interviewing someone and I was using my phone as the camera doing a video interview. And I shot the whole thing vertical. And then I got back to my office and I realized, holy crap, I can't like cut any of this video into a YouTube video without making it look really bad. And, you know, just second nature, I was so, you know, there you go. Squeeze me out. This is like the new, what is it? New hook?
Yeah, right.
Pull me off stage.
The vertical video hook.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think just filming on your phone with the vertical, it's just second nature, right? And so it's natural that video would be that way as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, so next time you got to do your interviews on Snapchat, I guess.
Oh, I failed. I learned. I'll learn for next time. I learned.
All right, up next, a few Super Bowl-related stories. And the kicker, they have very little anyways to do with actually the game of football. But first, let's take a minute to thank PillPack, which is the sponsor of this episode. I mean, I'll be honest, no one loves going to the pharmacy. Never, you know, I certainly don't enjoy going to the pharmacy, sitting there waiting for my prescription to get filled. Maybe you show up thinking it should already be filled. I did this. But no, they won't begin the process until you check in, meaning you're forced to kind of sit there and stare at your smartphone. At least you have your smartphone. While they get around to giving you what you came in for, it's necessary. It's just not always the best use of your time. Instead, you can check out PillPack. Pretty awesome stuff. It's founded by a second generation pharmacist. It's inspired, that was inspired to use technology and design to fix the pharmacy and deliver a better customer experience. Your pill pack arrives in this recyclable dispenser with all of the medication kind of inside in their own individual pouches. I'll just go ahead and tear that off. Got it. Leave with it, take it, whatever you need to do. It's all there, complete with the directions and an image of all the medications sent along as well. PillPack pre-sorts and delivers your medication and vitamins
into these packets. They're individually labeled, like I said, with a date and time for each dose. PillPack uses robots, digital imaging technology, along with pharmacist oversight to ensure the accuracy of every PillPack. People are still an important part of the equation here. PillPack's pharmacists are available 24/7 from the privacy of your own home. So no more long lines, no more awkward conversations at the pharmacy. They also proactively call your doctor for you to manage all your refills so you'll never run out. No extra cost beyond your standard copays. Shipping's always free. It's compatible with most major insurance plans, including most forms of Medicare Part D. When you sign up for PillPack, they make sure that your insurance is compatible before they transfer any of your medications over. And switching is easy. You can sign up on their secure site and they take care of everything for you. Recognized by Time Magazine as a top 25 invention, Jill Duffy actually gave it a great review in PC Magazine, who named PillPack an editor's choice health service. There's also a PillPack medication reminder app for the iPhone and Apple Watch. PillPack is simple, it's convenient, it's modern, and you won't believe how cool it is until you try it. It's going to simplify everything for you. Here's what I want you to check out. Visit pillpack.com/twit to sign up now. Their site is awesome. It only takes 5 minutes to sign up. When you use our link and transfer your prescriptions to PillPack, you'll get a credit for $20 worth of vitamins and OTCs. So check it out for yourself. That's pillpack.com/TWIT. And we thank PillPack for their support of this show.
All right. So, Kurt, Uber invited you to Uber Pool with Minnesota Vikings tight end Kyle Rudolph. Is that what Uber Pool is for? Uber for carpooling with famous journalists and football players?
Wow, I'm flattered you called me a famous journalist. I think that my new beat actually is just riding in the back of, you know, big, nice black cars with cool NFL athletes. Because I did an interview with Drew Brees, who's also an NFL player. The very next day, we rode in the back of a limo together, and I was like, this could be a cool beat, right? Like, ride in the back of cars with famous people. But with this Uber thing, they were trying to lure folks who were in town for the Super Bowl to use Uber, I'm guessing, more than using Lyft. And I think that, you know, there were a lot of tourists. I shouldn't call them tourists. A lot of visitors in town for the game. And, you know, Uber's not as big outside of San Francisco as we probably all think that it is here. And so they said, hey, this might be the first experience anyone has with Uber. Let's make sure it's a memorable one. We're going to throw NFL players in the back seat and let them play video games together. And I said, sure, I'll try it out. And it was fun.
I think you've got a show idea right there, like Jerry Seinfeld, like, but, you know, Ubering in with football players and video games instead of comedians in car with coffee.
So, Jerry, it's me.
Yeah. And football players.
So close.
And video games.
So.
Right. I just do that instead of real work. And, you know, people pay me a lot of money to do that. I love the idea.
Okay. Let's
work
on it.
If you guys are interested in having another show, I'm happy to.
But
have to talk figures.
Okay, yeah, let's talk about that after the show, offline. But Uber Pool, is that actual ride sharing? Not like, you know, I think Uber is often called ride sharing when no one shares an Uber anymore, but that's what Uber Pool is?
So Uber Pool is where you are getting a ride and the driver also picks up a stranger who happens to be nearby you but headed in the same direction. So, you know, it's the carpool feature in the app. So it's typically cheaper. And it's supposed to be more efficient, right? Because now one driver is picking up two people from the same neighborhood and dropping them off in the same neighborhood in just one ride. And so, you know, around here in San Francisco, that's pretty popular. A lot of people use Uber Pool or Lyft Line. It's Lyft's version of the same thing. I think that Uber is still new enough in a lot of places and not enough cities necessarily have Uber Pool to the point where it's like mainstream now. So I think this was also a promotion to try and, you know, get people aware of what Uber Pool was and kind of, you know, encourage them to use that when they go back home to wherever it is they were visiting from.
Nice. Okay, continuing on with the game here. It's always fun to kind of take a look at how technology is infiltrating the ads during the Super Bowl. So we've got a couple of stories here. First, Danny Sullivan at MarketingLand did all the hard work breaking apart the 60 ads that were shown, noting some interesting points. Basically, that hashtags are like the king of Super Bowl as far as technology infiltrating the Super Bowl. Hashtags beat URLs in ads 45% to 35% of the time. You know, there were hashtags a lot more places than there were straight up URLs. Twitter and Facebook, were the social networks that were explicitly mentioned in some, but not many, like three per, essentially. And that's like actively like on Twitter or on Facebook, but not necessarily printed on screen. That's a different story. No Snapchat, no YouTube, no Instagram. So if we thought those were hot and they were going to be all over the place, they were not. But yeah, so hashtags have long been kind of associated with Twitter because that's kind of, I don't know, that's where you started to see a huge proliferation of them, and that's where people are still trading them. But I feel like they're so platform agnostic at this point. So is the use of hashtags in ads in this regard, is that an admission that Twitter is winning? You know what I mean? In the minds of like marketers, yeah. Or is it just that the hashtag seems to work across the board?
Well, they don't understand. I think they don't understand.
Do you think
still post hashtags on Facebook and there's no point really. And by the way, the kids these days, they don't like hashtags.
Oh, what is it then?
It's just that's a sign of an old person. It's like saying, you know, when our parents said groovy, like that, using hashtags.
Interesting.
Even the ironic hashtag, huh? That was always, I feel like that's kind of come and gone too.
Might have. I think it has.
Hashtag. To answer your question though, I mean, I think that people still associate real time with Twitter.
Yeah.
And I think the hashtag certainly, you know, it was a Twitter thing long before it was ever a Facebook thing, even if it is a Facebook thing. So I do think that, you know, that's kind of a nod to Twitter that, hey, continue this conversation online, maybe Twitter being the top choice that the advertisers are thinking of. That being said, I mean, the hashtags now transcend, right? They're on Instagram. Mm-hmm. They're also on Facebook. So I think it's relevant on all three platforms. I'm kind of surprised that number went down then, given the fact that hashtags are for more than just Twitter. Makes me wonder if you know, I realized it was a small, 50 to 45%. So not super huge jump, but I am surprised it's going down. Makes me wonder if, you know, maybe we're going to see fewer hashtags next year if they're trying to drive people somewhere else or if the conversations just aren't as relevant online as they were a few years ago. But I think it's still a Twitter thing. It feels like a Twitter thing.
Yeah. Now, speaking of Twitter and Facebook, you just posted about kind of Twitter and Facebook during the Super Bowl. You found that there is less activity on those services than in previous years. Why is that?
Yeah. You know, so it is fewer posts, a lot fewer on Facebook. It was like, you know, they measure posts, likes, and comments, I believe. They bundle those together and saw a lot fewer of those for Twitter, fewer tweets. I think the issue is that, you know, the game, we kind of talked about this before the show, like the game itself was kind of boring. If you're a football fan, I think it was boring. If you're not a football fan, it was probably super boring. And so there wasn't this, like, you know, last year, the game was literally decided on, like, the last play of the game. In the last minute, this didn't have any of that. And so I think when there's not the drama, when there's not the, and we also talked about the commercials were kind of blah, right?
There weren't great
commercials. There wasn't great football action, fewer reasons to go tweet and Facebook and all that good stuff. At the same time, I mean, the timing's not ideal for Twitter. You know, they have their earnings this week in a few days. Everyone's already concerned, like, are people, you know, is growth hurting? What's the deal? Are people still using Twitter? And then all of a sudden now they have fewer people participating in the Super Bowl. It's not a good look for them. It's bad timing. They could have really used like a triple overtime game with, you know, 40 streakers across the field and, you know, Beyonce coming out for like an encore. I don't know. There was a lot of things they could have used that didn't happen. So unfortunately, social was down this year.
So the most exciting moment for me on Twitter was at the end of the game. I mean, we've totally all been there. You get really excited. You tweet without thinking about it. That happened to Tim Cook after yesterday's Super Bowl. He tweeted a picture from the field, and it was very blurry. And we presume that he used his iPhone and didn't think about the fact that the internet was watching him and would be merciless in their criticism of this blurry iPhone. At least he took it in vertical. That was one of my favorite responses. And then, you know, that guy, apparently Tim Cook or whoever runs Tim Cook's Twitter, blocked that guy. And of course, then when you block someone, then that person always will screenshot the fact that you've blocked them and to shame you even more. And it's just this... I don't know. What, I feel a little bit sorry. Well, no one should feel sorry for Tim Cook, actually, because
no, but I will say, if it really was, it looks like it was maybe him who took the photo, unless he brings his social media handler onto the field of the Super Bowl with him, which would be the best job ever. So I imagine it was him, in which case, you know what? That's cool. I think it's cool when CEOs, especially someone as well-known as Tim, is handling his own social media. So, yeah, unfortunate, right? Doesn't look great for the iPhone, but I don't think it's going – someone's going to say, oh, I'm not buying an iPhone anymore. Did you see that blurry Tim Cook Super Bowl photo? Oh, no, not going to impact someone's decision. It's just embarrassing. But, you know – kudos to him. Kudos to him for doing his own photo. That's what I say.
Yeah,
You know what he did that none of us were able to do? What? He was on the field at the end of the Super Bowl game.
The Super Bowl?
Right. Yeah, I mean, that's of course why he got all that, you know, criticism on Twitter, because everyone's
Totally. It was just kind of interesting though, right? Yeah. Like that's a huge feature of the camera of the phone is the camera. The CEO is Tim Cook. Like you just kind of expect that you're not going to see that. And so it was interesting. It's one of those, oh, he's human too kind of moments, right. I suppose.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, TNT's fan of the day is Zenrahi, who sent us this image of her setup on Instagram saying, Saturday, how I watch TNT Saturday afternoon in bed via Chromecast from the iPhone 6.
There you go.
There we are.
No more Saturday morning cartoons. It's Saturday morning tech news today.
Yep. Looks cozy. Show us how you watch or listen to TNT. Just record a video or take a picture of yourself or your setup and post it on Instagram, Google+, Twitter, or Facebook. And use the hashtag if you think it's groovy. Just use how I watch.
If it's still cool.
How I watch TNT. And we will find it. Now, after the break, I've been trying to convince people that driverless cars are safer than me as a driver, but clearly no one is listening. But first, let's take a minute to thank Wealthfront, the sponsor of this episode. Tech News Today is brought to you by Wealthfront. You know that you should be investing your money for the long term for you or your family's financial health, and you've probably wondered how you should do it. Traditional advisors charge huge fees, between 1% and 3% of what you've got under management, plus hidden fees for transactions and changes. Wealthfront makes it easy for anyone to access world-class long-term investment management. You can get started today at a minimum of $500. It takes only a few minutes to sign up for an account at wealthfront.com, and it goes right to work, monitoring your portfolios round the clock and taking action as soon as the opportunity arises. Their seamless software optimizes your investments for the best risk-adjusted return net of taxes and fees. Now, we've heard from many of you who have used Wealthfront, and you love how you can diversify your portfolio and buy stocks from in-demand companies like Apple and Amazon and Facebook, all commission-free. Wealthfront is transparent and accessible. You can view all your accounts in one place, whether they're personal, joint, or retirement. You can also see every trade that Wealthfront makes on your behalf in your dashboard, on your desktop, or with their mobile app. Their sophisticated investment strategies like tax loss harvesting and direct indexing optimize your after-tax returns while simultaneously lowering your tax bill. With Wealthfront, you pay 0.25% a year. That's 25 basis points, zero commissions, and no hidden fees. That's less than $5 a month to invest a $30,000 account. There are no additional charges for any of Wealthfront's services. Wealthfront manages over $2.6 billion in client assets, and it's grown over 20 times in the past 2 years. What are you waiting for? Invest in your future today with Wealthfront. Visit wealthfront.com/TNT to sign up and get your free personalized investment portfolio. You'll see the customized allocation they recommend for your profile. And just for Twit listeners, if you sign up to invest, Wealthfront will manage your first $15,000 entirely free of charge for life. Join the many Twit fans who have seen huge success in Wealthfront and claim your offer today at wealthfront.com/TNT.
All right, just when you thought driverless cars were about to break into the mainstream, seriously, who thinks this is happening anytime soon? According to new data from polling for a morning consult, the American public is afraid of our autonomous automobile future. 43% believe driverless cars are unsafe. 51% said they would not ride in one, period. Older voters more hesitant than younger voters. That's I know, I suppose that's not that surprising. Women doubt driverless cars more than men, according to their study.
That's because we're such good drivers.
Is it? There we go. I don't know. I mean, A, this is happening no time soon, so I don't know. I don't know why we're worried about it. But B, what do we think? I think I can confirm this based on some random conversations I had with people over the weekend.
Yeah, I can too. Random conversations with people in your real life. Like, no, that's too scary. But it's statistics. The statistics don't lie. Numbers don't lie.
Well, that depends on how they were
robots generated. Are safer than people.
Yeah.
I don't know. You guys ever been to Disneyland and ridden in that, the car where you have no control? Even that kind of freaks me out a little bit. And that's on a track. Thought of being, 65 down the 101.
I just don't know.
Not any control.
Well, elevators freaked people out too. And then, they had the elevator operators and then, mm-hmm. they just eased away from that. And now you just get yourself in a box and you're thrown up and down. And
Your elevator is the only one on that particular track.
True.
You're not navigating around other elevators.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know. Like, on one hand, I totally trust technology to a certain degree. And I know that at least I feel pretty confident that at some point, if this becomes a publicly accessible thing, they will have done their homework and it will be a safe scenario. I just don't know that it's happening anytime soon. And maybe over time, I will be convinced of it because I will think they will have done all the work they need to. But really, how long have they been working on this? You can't imagine that this would happen anytime soon and that people wouldn't be afraid of it based on the short amount of time it's been developed.
Well, they slowly are slipping in the technology.
Yeah,
piece by piece. Like, you drive on like most new cars have autonomous features.
Yeah.
You don't have to
do.
Do a lot. And mm-hmm. then they just slowly move those in more and more. And then
parallel parks for you.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Before you know it, you look up and you're not doing anything. You're reading a magazine while you're driving. It's great. I do it now. It's wonderful.
Well, Kurt, thank you so much for joining us for the full hour. It was such a pleasure to get to have your intelligence and wit on to talk about all these stories. Facebook, Twitter, it all keeps happening.
Battery. Thank you.
You've got the most active beat, right?
Thank you. Yeah, I was going to say, there's a lot going on. So, and there's a lot of things that people care about. I have a cool beat. People actually care about the beat and it's great. It makes it more rewarding, I guess, because it's a lot of work, but people want to know what's happening at these companies. That makes me feel good. So.
Well, Kurt Wagner is a reporter at Recode and at KurtWagner8 on Twitter.
And thanks for joining us. Thank you both for having me.
Thank you, Kurt.
Take care.
We'll talk
to you
soon.
Happy Monday. All right. See you later.
See ya. All right, tomorrow's guest will be Becky Worley. That's right. Becky's coming onto the show. Can't wait to see her tomorrow. TNT records live every Monday through Friday at 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern, 12 a.m. UTC at twit.tv/live. You can be a part of the show by emailing us at tnt@twit.tv. You can leave us a short voicemail, 260-TNT-SHOW, and you can hit us up on Twitter. We are at Tech News Today TV.
Subscribe to our show at twit.tv/TNT and subscribe to our newsletter at twit.tv/newsletter. And if you want to tweet blurry pictures at me, please do. I promise not to mock you. I am at Megan Maroney.
And I am at Jason Howell. Thanks to our producer. I'm told that I made up the term live producer. producer Anthony Nielsen and all the folks who help us produce this show in so many ways every single day. And thanks to you for talking tech with us. We will see you tomorrow. Bye, everybody.